Hi.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Russell.
I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a privilege and a pleasure to be here, and I'm really, it's really an amazing thing to me. I was, first of all, can y'all hear me in the back?
No.
Is that a no? Oh my God, Patty, can you hear me back there? No, I was at the meeting before this, and it was hard to hear, you know, so I'll try to raise my voice and all that sort of stuff. I'm sort of amazed because I was talking to some of my buddies on the way driving down here. I was talking about your parking situation. You know, tomorrow I'll have 32 years in this deal. And now, what's your name? What's your name again? Sherry? Sharon has 19 years. Today. Nicole, where are you, Nicole? Where are you, Nicole? Where's Nikki? Oh, Nikki, you got 1 year, right? I got your chip right here, your medallion. Come here and get it. I promised your father, he said it would mean a lot to you if I gave you a medallion, and I promised I'd do it, and you know, I suffer from Alzheimer's, so if I don't do it now, I'll forget it, and then he'll beat me up, and he's bigger than me, you know, so come up here and get your medallion. It's like an alky roadblock there. God bless you, baby. God bless you. I'm proud of you. That's great. I see a lot of people. I see a lot of people I know here. You know, it's pretty amazing that I've known for a long time, and some new friends that I don't know. But what I'm amazed is, this group, 32 years ago, you weren't here. It was someplace else. This group has been around for a long time, and I was explaining to some of my friends who had never been here how instrumental this group has been in a lot of people's lives, and how so many people have gone to this group. And I was trying to explain to them one of the challenges you're going through now with the parking situation. I don't know what the politics are with that, or you know why they're trying to cut down the parking where there's no place to park. And I mean, this, you know, I'm looking at this crowd. I'm trying to figure out where you guys must be parking on Miami Beach or something. You know, there's no parking out there. So I mean, it's really a testament to this group and the resilience of this group. So it's good to be here. It's good to see Otis here. I'm glad you showed up, Otis. How old is Otis?
11 months.
11 months sober today. 11 months. He hasn't had a drink in 11 months, one day at a time. Very good, Otis, okay? Otis would come up here and pick up a medallion or something, but he can't walk yet, so you know. You know how that is, you know, so it's good to be. I like to see you know, I love to see moms and dads with children, actually. They can be disturbing sometimes. Things can happen. But I like to see them in AA because my mom was an alcoholic. And I was brought up in an alcoholic home. And, you know, an alcoholic home is an interesting place to be brought up in. I'm probably not the only guy. I don't blame my alcoholism on my mom or my dad or any of that stuff. But, you know, when you're in an alcoholic home at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's like dishes hitting the wall and people screaming at each other and all sorts of stuff going on. It probably hurts you somewhere in the self-esteem category or something. It's, you know, but I little boys and girls, you know, they need sober daddies and mommies. So I always enjoy. I don't like to see people ask to leave rooms because they have their kids and everything. I like to see moms and dads in AA rooms, you know, and we'll just sort of suffer through whatever happens. I know Otis has promised to be good here, so, you know. We're on step three, and we might actually, I might accidentally, you know, actually talk about step three. Well, actually, the truth is, for those of you who have heard me, and I know there's a few of you have, or heard the recordings, or whatever it is, you know that when I do a 12-step series, what it is it's 12 separate talks on step three. Disguised as other steps, you know what I mean? So, because let me tell you something, you get step three down, you're going to be doing all the other steps and you're going to be a superstar. You're going to do fine, you know? You got problems with step three, there's going to be problems all over the place. Step three, the one thing that's consistent throughout this entire book from beginning to end is sacrificing yourself on the altar and giving yourself to the Lord, giving yourself to God. That's the one thing that's consistent from beginning to end. There's a lot of things I'm not going to be able to explain because there are things that are of God or of God and things that are of man or of man, and I can't explain everything, and we so much want to control and understand everything. And you know, before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew everything, didn't you? I knew everything. Everything about everything, you know? You know, it's when you're so smart, when you're smarter than anybody, you know? I knew everything. I controlled everything. I managed everything. Was on top of everything. And my life became an abysmal failure. And I died. At 31 years old, I died. I'm going to be 64 in March. I died at 31. My life was over. I remember thinking to myself in December of 1980, my life was over, it's never going to be better again. I had destroyed a marriage and a wonderful lady. I had destroyed my son by moving out on him so I could chase women and be free and drink, free to go to the bar. I left a beautiful wife, a beautiful house, a beautiful child, you know, everything. I left it in the dust. So I sacrificed everything, the American dream, I sacrificed everything, beautiful family, I ripped their hearts out. Of course, I didn't even think, because when you're an alcoholic, you don't really, I don't know what it is, part and parcel of the disease is you don't get other people's pain. I mean, if you get a paper cut, that's good for 15 meetings, you know what I mean? If somebody looks at you funny, you know, that's good for really a resentment that lasts 10 years. But you can crush people's hearts. And it doesn't hardly even affect you. You don't feel, and if they look funny or they look like they're making you feel guilty, you say, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry. You know, what's the big deal? It's like they're not allowed to have pain, that you don't feel their pain. Maybe 20, 30 years later in Alcoholics Anonymous, you look back and say, wow, I really did some damage there. You know, and maybe it's only after... I remember I sponsored a guy once, and he had finally gotten a job after he'd been sober for 3 or 4 months, and was trying to support his wife and kids. And you know how I said last time, we come in here unemployable, and 3 months later we're underpaid, and that's but 3 months later we can't get a job, and 3 months later after we get a job we're talking about how they're screwing us, and we should be paying, you know, we should be running the place. And he had finally gotten a job. And he was picking up his first paycheck. And he had cashed it or something like that. And he had bought all sorts of groceries. And somehow, some way, he had turned his back and somebody stole all the groceries. Stole the card and everything like that. And it was gone, you know. All his money he had spent on groceries for the kid. And they had, I don't know how it was, he went somewhere in the bathroom and they had taken it away and that was it. And so he was upset. And, he was an alcoholic. And he was a thief. I mean, that was his deal. He was a thief. And he was very, very upset. Because all the money he had worked for 2 weeks was gone. It was in groceries, and he was upset. And I remember he came up to me. He was very upset. He said, they stole all my groceries. They stole everything from me. And I said, now you know how it feels. Now you know how it... I said, now you know how it feels. He never knew how... He was a thief. He never knew how it felt. Because he was the stealer, you know? He was never the stealee. So it was a great lesson for him, you know? He was, you know, whether you're the leavor and not the leavee, you know, and the hurtor and not the hurtee, and so all these things are great lessons, you know? So it was, it's a great thing. And you know, they start off, you know, at 31 years old, I remember telling myself, I said, my life is over. It's never going to be better. I couldn't stop drinking. I was living in a one-bedroom, my bachelor cave, one-bedroom apartment in Carl Gables, and I couldn't stop drinking. I'm not going to go into the long drinking thing, but I couldn't stop. And if you're in here, if you're an alcoholic, you know what it's like to, you know what the disease is like. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We're recovered. I've recovered. I'm not a recovering. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Listen, emotional pain is tough. being emotionally sober is the next frontier. All that stuff is good. But I know what they're talking about when they say I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. That's the deal when you can't stop drinking. I mean, let me tell you something. I'm sorry if your boyfriend left, if your girlfriend left, if this is happening, if that is happening, if you got pain in your life. The truth of the matter is that's nothing compared to the I can't stop drinking deal. Because I know what that was like when I woke up in the morning and I said, I'm not going to have a drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was drinking. Or I woke up the next morning and said, I'm not going to go to the bar today or spend money on booze today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters so I can get up $2.50, go to the Winn-Dixie and get a quart bottle of, you know, Carlos Rossi Chianti and drink myself silly. And I did it over and over and over and over and over again until I finally said, well, what's the use? I'm never going to be able to stop. I couldn't even envision a life without drinking. And let me tell you something. That's a hopeless state of mind and body. And I haven't had that going on for 32 years, one day at a time. So, you know, I've recovered from that hopeless. Now, don't get me wrong, and I don't even know how to explain this. This is one of these things that I won't be able to explain to you. If you knew, you may not even understand this, but I, you know, you don't have to understand it. Maybe one day you'll understand. I don't know how to explain this to you, but I have no desire to drink. I have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. I'm not scared of the drink right now, but I can tell you right now, I know I could be drunk in an hour. And I can't even explain that to you. And you ready for this? And I'm not worried about it, but I know I could be drunk in an hour. And I can't even explain that to you. And the deal is, I feel great about that. Because every guy I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous who says I ain't never going to drink again ends up drinking. Every person I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous that I sponsor who said, don't bother me, I don't need to go to a meeting, I've got this thing down, I'm not going to drink again, I understand it, I'm okay, ends up drinking. And I'm a guy, I would never say I'm never going to drink again because I honestly believe I could be drunk in an hour because I have no power over alcohol and yet I'm not scared of it and I have no desire to drink. And somehow I figure the reason I have no desire to drink has something to do with the fact that I think I have no power over the drink. And I have to totally rely on God, who I believe saves me from the drink. And because I rely on him, and I believe that although I'm a bozo, he's not, and he's all powerful, and I believe that, I feel safe and secure today from the drink, and a lot of other things. And I can't even explain that to you. I know it sounds weird. It's like the Apostle Paul says in the book of Romans, you know, to the natural man, to the man I used to be, the man who looks at the world, this stuff is foolishness. You go out there and grab a guy in the bars, one of the guys in the bars, who's just like that, us, who's an alcoholic, and you bring him in here before his time. Remember they used to have a commercial, we will serve no wine before his time. You bring an alky in here before his time, okay? An alky. You know, we're pretty, let me tell you something. Alkies know alkies. You know what I mean? Listen, alkies know alkies. I know about the bullshit when we say, well, I can't really say you're an alcoholic. You got to determine that yourself. Let me say, I can shake hands with a guy and tell he's an alcoholic, you know? You know that. Anybody who's been around for a while, you know, all the guy has to say to me is say, you know, they don't know who they're screwing with. He doesn't have to be drunk. I just meet him on the street and says, they don't know who they're screwing with. I said, he's an alcoholic, you know? I don't know what he's drinking or what he's drunk, but he's an alcoholic. Just using a, he could turn a phrase and I know he's an alcoholic because he thinks like me. Because being an alcoholic, the alcoholism, the alcohol consumption is really but a symptom of their disease. That's what our book says. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. And so we know without, if you really want to see, if you really get attuned to it, listen, I've been hanging around alcoholics before I got here for like 20 years. And after I came here, I've been hanging around alcoholics for 32 years. And most of the alcoholics I've hung around with for 32 years, have been sober, not drinking. So I recognize, and they've been talking to me. I've been sponsoring them. And you know something? You know what I, when you hang around alcoholics, the same type of critter, for 32 years, and they're all talking to you, you know what you get real smart on? Alky talk. You get really sharp on alky think. And you know what you find out? That all that crap I said where we're all different, I'm unique, you cannot, that we're all twins. We think exactly the same. That's why we feel so good when we come in here, because we hear somebody talking from the podium truthfully about themselves. They say, man, that's the way I am. And all of a sudden, instead of feeling like an orphan out there, you say, I'm home. You know what I mean? This guy's as nutty as I am. The nuttiest guy in the room gets up and says something. You say, that guy's a nut. And then you turn to your friends and says, man, I've done that. You know what I mean? There's nobody's strange. It's all the same deal. And it's not about the booze because nobody's drinking in here. It's how they talk. It's how they think. How they think. How they react. It's the phrases they use. It's how they react to life. That's what alcohol, what comes right down to it. It's not the drinking. It's the thinking. It's the way we think and how we think. And what bothers us and what upsets us and all that. How can you hang around for 32 years and not recognize that? So you go ahead and go into a bar and you just grab, I'll trust your judgment, grab a guy who's an alcoholic. He won't know it. It doesn't matter. Just grab him. Say, come with me. We're going to an AA meeting. Well, I'm not an alcoholic. I said, I know, but come with me anyway. You know what I mean? I'm going to, you're going to come in. You're going to be my example of somebody who's not an alcoholic. And you plunk him in here before his time. And the greatest AA speaker will say, that guy's full of crap. We'll say he's full of crap. It won't mean anything because the natural man, the person who's natural man, this stuff is foolishness. But to the spiritual man, it's life. It saves our life. I mean, you guys would have never sit for 5 seconds for any AA talk, let alone my talk, before your time had come. And all of a sudden, you can't get enough AA meetings and see, listen to AA speakers, and they're the thing, and you can't explain. How can you explain that to somebody who's not ready? Some of you have been around here for a while, and you understand it's impossible to explain this thing to somebody who's not ready. So when it comes right down to it, no matter how much I talk about my experience, my strength, my hope, my history, I read the book and everything like that, the bottom line is there's a mystery going on here. Deep down underneath all of this, there's a mystery only known by God as to why some people gravitate towards this thing and stay sober for 20, 30 years and want this thing more than anything else, and other people are chasing skirts or just here temporarily. You understand what I'm saying? And you can't. I'd like to believe, because I'm an alcoholic, that I can fix somebody. You know, you get the phone calls. You probably just got the phone calls. I got a friend like, Fred, will you talk to him? I mean, because I'm sure if he talks to you, you'll fix him. You know what I mean? He'll touch the hem of your garden. You know, you just talk to him. Talk to him like you talk to him in those rooms. You know what I mean? You know, and they, you know what happens? They run away from you. You know, they're not ready. This is great. I was at the Triangle Club. I'm doing the steps. I did step 3 at the Triangle Club a few days ago. And this kid came up to me. God bless him. And after the talk, he says, I've never heard anybody talk. He says, nobody's ever understood me like you understood me. This is exactly, he was 16 years old. He says, this is exactly the way I think. Never in my entire life, which is like, my shoes are older than this kid. You know what I mean? In my entire life, I've never heard anything like that. You're the only person who's ever been able to explain, to talk exactly the way I think. He says, will you be my sponsor? I said, sure, absolutely. So I said, just email me your number and blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, I gave him, you know, I said, if you want to know what it's all about, you can listen to a step series on rocketed.org or whatever it is. And the next day I get an email. And the email says this. He says, you know, I listened to 8 minutes of your first step. And he says, I don't think I'm ready. I was like, I don't know what I said during that 8 minutes, you know, but that was the fastest turnaround I've ever seen. But, you know, that's the whole point. The point is, I can't make somebody ready. I can't make somebody ready for this program. I can't make somebody ready for God. I can't say God in the right way, or turn your life and you will over to God in the right way, you know, so that you're going to understand that or want that if you're not ready. No matter how I say it, no matter how much I want to water it down, there's going to be some people are just going to chomp on that deal. Maybe not now. Going to go for that deal. You know what I mean? All I can do is try to carry the message of my own sobriety. What's going on with me? And you know, at 31 years old, I thought my life was over, destroyed. I couldn't stop drinking. And now, what am I? I'm going to be 64 years old. I got 4 kids that I've raised sober, you know, 6 grandkids. I don't know. I started off as a Jewish kid from New York, and now I'm a deacon in the Presbyterian Church, and I started a ministry. I can't explain to you. How can I explain to you that my life is extraordinary now? Extraordinary. And it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with him. And if you ask me, well, how did it happen? Well, I could give you the facts and figures. I went here, I went there, I got this sponsor, I got that. I would try to piece it together, but the truth of the matter is, even if I told you everything that happened to me and you nod your head and I see that, I can't explain how it happened. Because it happened because of God. It didn't happen because of me, because my best thinking on my best day got me in here. Some way, somehow, I was led to certain people. You know, who can figure out why some people want vanilla and some people want chocolate? It says on page 29, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Apparently, your relationship with God is part and parcel of your A story, and it has something to do with this because it says our stories disclose in a general way what used to happen, what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And in the A, B's, and C's that's read before every room to newcomers and everybody, it says the three ideas that we have to be convinced of, is that we're alcoholics and we can't manage our own lives, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, that only God could and would if he was sought, and that's told early on. And for those that think that'll scare somebody off, it says in the book, it says, burn the idea into the alcoholic's mind that he can survive and not drink and make this thing, regardless of job or no job, wife. The only thing is he trusts God and cleans house. It says, as a matter of fact, it says in working with others, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God, which is probably why it says also the fifth chapter. It says right here, it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making, and they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything. I love when they say stuff like that. Because it's like it's making it clear. It's like the great fact is this and nothing less. Okay, this is a big deal. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. You know, it says that. It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root cause. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. Above everything, we must get, you know, if you're an alcoholic and you're in this fellowship, this book is our basic text. So whether you understand it or not, the bottom line is to ever make it in here as an alcoholic. This isn't just, you're going to have to somehow, some way, come around to believing this book instead of believing the wisdom of the rooms or believing your own mind. And I can promise you, based upon 32 years of experience, the people that adopt the reason in this book and start thinking the way this book thinks as opposed to the way they think, trying to rationalize them, telling themselves rationalize, are the people that are going to be happy, joyous, and free. And experience much of heaven, be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which they had not even dreamed. And that's not my opinion. I'm talking about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just read the big book. And the big book says this. It says, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It doesn't say we must, or it's going to be a little bit of a problem. We must, or it's going to bruise us. It says we must, or it kills us. And then it says this. God makes that possible. So I don't care whether you believe in God or not. I just want you to know what the book says. The book takes a stand. It takes a stand. Listen, I'm sorry. If you're an atheist, nobody's going to kick you out of here because the only requirement for membership is the desire to stay sober. I don't care if you worship doorknobs. I don't care because the only requirement is to stay sober. That's the only requirement. But let me tell you something. The book takes a stand. AA takes a stand. That's why they wrote chapter to the agnostics. They wrote a chapter. It's to the agnostics. It's to the non-believers. I'm going to boil it down for you. It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. This is what it says. It says if you're an alcoholic, you're not going to like what we're going to say. The hackles on your neck, whatever hackles are, they're standing up, okay? You're not going to like this. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. That's why they say all this stuff. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we had liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying our own power. We had to have God's help. And it says, this is how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. We decided here and after Drama Life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone, the main deal of the new and triumphant arch in which we passed the freedom. And then it goes on, if we sincerely took this such a position, this position, where we turned everything over to him, everything, look, this is what you have to turn over to him. You ready for this? Look at the, you got to turn over your will. Your will. You know what your will is? That's what you want to do. Your will is what you want to do. You know, like if you say, I want to go to the movies, that's like your will. If you say, I want that dress, that's your will. If you say, I want to charge this on the credit card, that's your will. If you say, I want to go out with that guy, I want to go out with that girl, you know, I don't want to go to meet tonight, that's your will, okay? Now what you got to do is you got to take everything that's your will and turn it over to him. You know what it says? It says in the back of the book, you know what it says at the back of the book? The last bit, it says, see to it your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You want great events? You got to turn your entire will over to him. Now, I don't know what's left. Now, the truth is, I have no idea. You know what that means? That means if somebody says to you, well, let's go out and help an alcoholic who needs help, let's meet Joe at the meeting, and you say, well, I don't want to do that. I want to watch TV. That's your will. That's not his will. His will is you go out and you help the alcoholic. Now, I'm not expecting you to like that. As a matter of fact, I'm expecting you to think, well, that's a load of crap. You know what I mean? Because if that's true, then you can't run your life. You can't manage your life. You got to think what God wants me to do, and you didn't sign up for that crap. I mean, I'm signing up for the not drinking team, but I'm not signing up for the you know, I can't watch TV. I did not sign up for that, and I'm not saying anybody does it perfectly, but try to understand what they're talking about here. This isn't theoretical stuff. This is how you live your life. Do you live your life on self-propulsion, doing what you want to do, what you feel like doing because you feel like doing it? Or do you think to yourself, I have a God, I have a relationship with God, I sort of understand what he wants and what he wants me to do, and he doesn't want me sitting on my ass watching a TV show. He wants me to go with Joe and help this alcoholic. So at least if you don't do it, you know you're not doing it. You're not lying to yourself. So when you're sucking on your thumb and you're a thumb-sucking crybaby 3 weeks down the road and you say it's AA's fault, you realize it's not AA's fault. You realize you're just not doing AA. So at least you're being honest, because that's the only requirement, the capacity to be honest, okay? That's the how and why of it. That's the triumphant why. If we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. How many people want remarkable stuff to happen in their lives? Okay. We had a new employer being all-powerful. It's not a higher power. It's the highest power. He's all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. If we kept close to him, that means you got to keep close to him. That means you got to know who he is. Otherwise, how are you going to keep close to him? And then you got to perform his work well. That means you got to know what his work is for you. And then you got to perform it. And you got to try to perform it well. You know, you want to know how to do AA? You want to know how to do this? You know, have a relationship with God. Try to figure out who and what he is, as imperfect as that is, what he wants you to do, and then do it to the best of your ability. You'll have remarkable things happen to you. You'll stay sober for 40, 50 years. Everything will be wonderful. Or do whatever the hell you want to do. And make believe you're an Alcoholics Anonymous and say, I'm an AA, and you'll pick up your medallions and do that deal, you know? Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. I know it sounds a little Christian there. I know it had, well, the whole thing came from the Bible. You know, they were all reading the Bible for the first 4 years before they got into this stuff. And as a matter of fact, that was the road that when they say, rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly follow our past, they were reading about him. They were talking about him. They were reading the Holy Bible. So they used those terms. We are now at step three. Many of us said to our makers, we understood him, and then they have the third step prayer. And then after the third step prayer, they say this line. Everybody knows the third step prayer. Do you know the line after the third step prayer? This is the line after the third step prayer. Let me read it to you. People don't know this line. Yep. Yeah, okay, so you think about this one. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Making sure we were ready. Well, how do you know whether you're ready or not? Well, they tell you. You know what they say? That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, I don't have my dictionary here. I used to have one. to try to examine the word utterly. I'll put it to you this way. When you turn your will and your life over to the care of God, your will is everything you want to do. You turn that over. It's not important anymore. Listen, what are you upset about? I had my will. I lived my life my way for 30 years. I screwed it up. You know, I ran the car into the wall. I sunk the boat. He's taken it away from me. I'm not allowed. It's not my life anymore. Don't you remember? At 30 years old, I was dead. I thought my life was over. It's never going to get better again. Like Jonah, I said, let me out of this fish. Save my life. He said, okay, now you're going to follow me. So now I'm living his life. I'm not even living my life anymore. I died in December of 1980 when I got on my knees and I gave my life to him. It was no longer my life anymore. It was his life. You know, I already had my shot. I blew it. Guess what? You did too. The good news is he can run it better than you can. That's the whole point. The whole point. That's probably why in the steps, they lead you into step 3. That's probably why they get you to step 11. That's probably why they say, okay, now that you have him, try to get close to him more and then tell other people about it. That's really what AA is all about. It's not about the not drinking club. It's about what's going to be the centerpiece of your life. We thought well before taking it. You know, that's it. You turn your entire will over to God, and in case there's any molecule of anything else in your life left, that's covered by your life too. You know how much you got? You know how much you get to keep? Zero. Nothing. Nada. But we try to hang on to those old ideas, don't we? Well, that's when we get into trouble. We shouldn't blame him. We shouldn't blame AA. Blame ourselves for trying to hang on. You know, so here's the deal. So I'm reading this thing in the book. One of the things I like to read is this, he sold himself short. It's a story in the book, if I could find it. Here it is. I want to read this to you. This guy had 18 years when he wrote this thing. This is the deal. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. Trite though that statement may seem. Now, this is a guy with 18 years, one of the old-timers, one of the guys who first started this thing, talking about what he's got out of this deal. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you read this story and you line it up with basically the stories in the book, like Dr. Bob or Bill Wilson's story, or basically what they're talking about in the book, they may use different language, but they all basically refer to the same thing. As a matter of fact, after I read this story, we're going to go to There is a Solution. And I'm going to show you something. I'm going to point out something to you in a couple of other places. These last 18 years have been the hat. Now, he's explaining to you what his life's about right now. You know, in the big book, you know what it says about the steps? You know, I know when you go into treatment centers, and I'm not putting down treatment centers. I'm not putting any of this stuff down, okay? But I know when you go into treatment centers, whether you're ready, whether you're not ready, whatever's going on, they give you assignments, right? They give you, like, homework. And they say, you got to do a first step. They say, okay, we're going to do a first step. And then whatever they do is the first step. You write things or you do things. We're going to do a second step. And then they have you do a third step. And they have you do a fourth step. And then you're allowed, I guess, outside the gates or something. And maybe you're given assignments, benchmarks that they can grade you on. Do you have a sponsor? You're going to meetings? Did you do a fourth step? And then after you do all that, they don't do this, but they sort of like pronounce you cured. Because you've now done the steps. You've done this, but anybody who's been to a treatment center more than once, you know, there are people who have been to 3 or 4 or 5 treatment centers and they had the same steps and everything. Know that just because you do the steps, that the steps won't keep you sober. I'm doing a step series. And I'm telling you the steps won't keep you sober. Every person that I know in Alcoholics Anonymous who has drank after a significant number of years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and there's a gazillion of them, have drank after they've done the steps and worked the steps gazillions of times. So the steps will, so that's the mystery. They tell you, do the steps, but the steps won't keep you sober. There are people that worship the steps. They think the steps are the most important thing. Do the steps. I'm teaching the steps, you know. I know guys that teach steps and they drink. The steps won't teach you sober because the steps are merely tools. They're tools in order to build what? A relationship with God. It says it in the book. To do the steps mechanically and say, I've done the 4 steps and everything, yet at the very end of it, and not have a relationship with God and turn your life over to God is basically just to be, you know, have a form of religion without any power, not have power. You'll be able to say, well, I got my medallion. I picked up my medallion. They stamped my green card. But it's not going to keep you sober because at 3 o'clock in the morning, when your mind is going a million miles per hour and they're all a bunch of worthless crap creeps and nobody understands because you're different, the fourth step ain't going to help you. None of these things are going to help you because the only person that's going to help you is him and you don't have any idea who he is because you're all alone and you're trying to control things. The steps are tools. It's like the steps are the hammer and the nails for building the house. It's like you need to build the house. After you build the house, you move into the house, okay? You don't sit around worshiping the hammer. These are the tools, okay? This is what he says. He says, this last 18 years of my life, the 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. Now, I'm going to read the rest of this, but I just want to say one thing, and I'll leave it by. I'll try not to talk too long about this thing. We got any guys in the room here? We got a lot of guys, right? Okay, listen. I don't know what the centerpiece of your life is. I don't know what you think about all the time. I really don't, guys, okay? I'm talking to the guys now. To the extent this applies to the girls, but I know we don't necessarily talk about the word worship around here. Worship, you know, like religious people talk about worship. But I worshiped women. If worshiping something means you think about something all the time, I worshiped women. And I know from sponsoring guys in here, and even before I got here, sitting in bars with guys, that I'm not the only one who was doing that crap. As a matter of fact, I would bet money on the fact that most of the guys that I've ever met in my life, all they do is think about women. That's what they think about. Now, sometimes they think about cars, but the reason they think about cars is if they get a car, they can get a gal. Or they think about jobs, you know, becoming president of the United States, because if they get a job and they become president or something like that and they have power, then they can get a gal. They're like fixed on the gals, okay? And I have a feeling that gals have the same thing going on in the other direction, which is probably why Bloomingdale's and Macy's does so well. It's probably why that most of the people are hooked. They're not hooked on Valium. They're not hooked on cocaine. They're hooked on blouses and stuff. You know what I mean? I've charged more money I don't have, you know, that I don't have, buying crap I don't need to impress people I don't like than you could possibly imagine. That's why everybody's charged up on credit cards and going out and they don't feel good. You get a new haircut, you get a new thing. Nobody's working on the inside. They're all working on the vanity stuff, the outside. Just read Ecclesiastes. Vanity, vanity. This isn't a new thing. We're addicted to, forget the alcohol, we're addicted to the entire world. We're addicted to movies, we're addicted to TV, we're addicted to cars, we're addicted to women, we're addicted to sex, we're addicted to the world. And you want something? We live our entire life out there before coming in here, chasing the things of the world, and you know where it gets us? Drunk and feeling crappy. And then we come in here for an hour a day, maybe, and then we go outside and you know what we do? Try to manage our lives so we can chase the things and get the things of the world. And then we come back here for discussions meetings, talk about how we're not getting the things of the world, and the things of the world are screwing us up, and how we get the things of the world. Sucking our thumb. Unless some idiot says to us something like, well, that's because you're really supposed to be doing his will and performing his works. He said, well, what does that have to do with my new car? What does that have to do with my job? What does that have to do with my girl? You know what I mean? Because what we want to do is we want to use AA to manage our life better so we won't drink, so we can go out and get the stuff we were chasing before we got here, and basically keep our life and leave my life alone. When the book is saying, no, your life is over, you've turned it over to him. If you want remarkable things, your life has to have a whole new basis. Just focus on him and do his works well. And then really, what do you care about the car, the gal, or anything like that? As long as you're serving God, that's the only thing that's important. Now, I can't make you understand that. I can tell you that's somehow what happened. I don't know why it happened to me. It's not because I'm a good person. I'm a selfish, self-centered pig. You know, I mean, I am. I know. I live with myself. I'm not just bragging about that. I mean, I am. That's what I am. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not like a saint or anything like that. So I'm reading this stuff in this book. Now, here's the deal. I'm coming in here just like any other alcoholic. I'm reading this stuff. I'm coming in here. I'm 30 years old. I've lived my entire life chasing cars, women, stuff, reading Playboy magazines, talking about that stuff, thinking about that stuff, hanging around guys that are doing the same thing. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready. Then you're ready. You're not even ready to take the steps unless you want what we have. And what did they have? They had God. That's all they had. They had nothing. Bill Wilson had nothing. Bob had nothing. They had God. That's all they had. And they turned their will and their life. He says, if you want what we have, and that's all they had. There's nothing in here about cars. There's nothing in here about money. There's nothing in here about sex or girls or anything like that or guys. There's nothing. It's all about God. The whole book is about God. All the steps are about God. All they have to talk about is about God. They say in the back of the book, we know but a little. At the end, after all this, says, we know but a little. So your real reliance has to be on him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's even going to show you who your friends are going to be. The whole life is over to God. While we sit here and pretend, you know, like the guy who came up to me after the meeting said, well, my sponsor says you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God. What? We must be in different fellowships. But if you're an alcoholic and you're in denial and you see what you want to see and we're sick puppies, You can absolutely, I'm absolutely clear that you can read this book and see those steps and not see God at all. Do you know that? Do you understand you can come in here and sit through step meetings and stay sober for 5, 10 years and look at the steps? And then ultimately, I've had guys come up to me and say this and ultimately go up and drink after 10 years of sobriety and then crawl back in here and all of a sudden come up to me and say, you know, I was sober for 10 years. I never heard this stuff about God. Now it makes perfect sense to me. I never heard that. I was sober for 12 years. Now, I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe, like, if they only had listened to me. I'm sure there were other people talking about God. But that's how serious this disease is. It says if you want what we have, what they had, whatever that was, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready. You're just going to be taking the steps before you're ready. And so this is what they had. Let me tell you what this guy tells you what he had. He sold himself short. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I want you to look for the part in here where he talks about the money. I want you to look for the part in here where he talks about his car. I want you to look at the part in there where he talks about getting laid every week. The Viagra and all that stuff. You know, I want you to look for the part in here where he talks about the vacations he's taken, or the yacht he owns, or the weight he lost, or how good looking he is, you know, or how he works out. I want you to look for the stuff he's talking about in here, which is the stuff you hear in every AA room discussion meeting. I want you to look for that stuff, because you ain't going to find it, because it ain't there. You know why? Because the central fact of his life was God. Because he turned his life over to God. Because the whole thing is about God. It's about none of the stuff, the 90% of the stuff that you hear in, even in Alcoholics Anonymous and discussion means, is not about him. As a matter of fact, the wisdom of the rooms are that they would prefer not to hear about him. Because if you hear too much about him, you start thinking about how you're not following him. And you say, who the hell is he to tell me I should follow him? I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to remain willfully blind. You know, I'll just go, I'm doing okay. I haven't had a drink all day. I picked up a one-year medallion. I don't want to hear this crap. This latest part of my life has had a purpose. Not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Have you heard anything about the money or the things or the stuff they're advertising on TV yet? Have you heard anything about the money or the things or the stuff they're advertising on TV yet or in the paper yet? Or with the talk show? Yeah, no, you haven't heard about that. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. Are they talking about what you see on TV, the commercials or stuff like that, you know? The love interests or anything like that, the sex? You don't see that. Well, guess what? I'm now going to talk about the money. because he does talk about the money. Here it comes. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. Oh, wonderful. I'm basically broke. I don't have a lot of shit. There it is. There it is. I don't have a lot of stuff. That's what he says about material stuff. I don't have much. But I have a fortune. This is his fortune. In friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. You ready for this? He says, above all. Here's that statement again. Above all. Above all. That must mean it's like above all. I have gained the understanding. I have gained the greatest thing. The greatest thing. Must be a car or something, like a Bentley or something like that. Right? According to any man. You ready for this? The love and understanding of a girl. No. No, that's God. God, I'm sorry. The love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Okay, now that's the deal. That's the statement. That statement is mirrored about 15,000 times in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what this thing is all about. That's what AA is all about. That's the only thing AA will give you. You may become a millionaire, you may not. You may have things, you may not have, but what you're going to get is you'll get that stuff. Now, here's the deal. Here's the problem. And I can't explain this to you. I cannot explain this to you. I'm just going to make a statement. I heard that, or I heard people talking about that from the podium, and I got excited. I'm telling you, I was a guy who was brought up on Playboy magazine, on American Express. I'm going to be a lawyer or a doctor or something like that so I can make money, looking for the girls and everything. So here's the question. How could that... I don't know. I like that deal. I wanted that deal. I wanted that. Now, if there's a guy in the back of the room and he's looking at his watch right now and saying, this guy's going to go over 5 minutes, blah, 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 because he's not really interested in that. I can't make him interested in that. If he's got to get going because the game's on... or because his girlfriend's waiting, or because he has a date, I can't, there's nothing I can say that's going to help him. He can do the steps until the cows come home. It ain't going to make any difference. You understand what I'm saying? And if there's somebody out there that heard that and said, I don't know what the hell he's talking about, but I know I want that deal, then I don't even have to worry about him. He's already cooked. He just doesn't even, he's already made 30. He's already got the 30 years. He doesn't even know it yet, because he's going to do whatever he has to do to get that deal. And he's not going to worry about the other stuff because he's focused on this deal. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The third step isn't going to be a problem for them. None of these steps are going to be a problem for him because he's focused. Because he wants what we have. He's focused on that deal. And that has nothing to do with brains or intelligence. That has to do with some people are focused on that deal. Some people aren't. And then you go to, there is a solution. In the front of the book. Where it talks about the difference between the ones that are in the not drinking club versus the ones that are in, you know, the rocking in the fourth dimension club. And this is what it says, which is consistent to what this guy is saying. It says this, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And you know that's just not, he's not saying we stopped drinking, because I know a lot of people, many people that have stopped drinking and they haven't been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven. They're thumb-sucking crybabies. So you know these guys are talking about something else other than not drinking. They're talking about a way of life that's so fundamentally different from your old alcoholic's way of life, where you're restless, irritable, discontented. You're so excited about this thing that life is incredible, and it doesn't even matter whether you have money or not or what's in the bank or anything. And how could that possibly be happening when the whole world's chasing after that? And I can't even explain that to you. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Which means it's the great fact. It's just this. And it's nothing less. Does that make any sense? I hope. Okay. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Now listen to this. The central fact of our lives today, these are the guys you're supposed to want what they have, is the absolute certainty that our Creator, God, Creator with a capital C. I suppose the doorknob could be your Creator if you were created by a doorknob. I mean, it's possible. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He You know who he is? He's the one that you're supposed to see to it. Your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass in you and countless others. He's the one who has all power, because there is one who has all power. That what is him, may you find him. He's that guy, that person, that deal, the person you're going to have a relationship with, the one that I'm supposed to be talking about if I'm doing it. That's the guy. That's the deal. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. Which is what they say at the end of the promises. He is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. And you know, this line, I'm saying, the only thing I'm leaving out is the 500 other lines in the big book, in the first 184 pages, where they say exactly the same thing a different way. And so, listen, don't take the third step. Don't get on your knees and say that thing. Don't develop a relationship with God. You're not hurting me. You know, don't do that. Try it your own way. Try it without God. Try it, you know, adopt your own way. All I'm saying is do it, because the truth is we don't have any a police force here. You know, the only reason I'm talking the way I'm talking here truthfully is because if I'm asked to do the steps, I'm going to talk to you about my experience of strength and hope. You know, this is my experience. This is my strength. This is my hope. This is apparently the same experience, strength and hope, that the guy who wrote He Sold Himself Short did. This is apparently the same experience, strength and hope, that the guys who wrote the big book is talking about when they say there is a solution. So I'm just, you know, what I'm being paid for is to talk about this program as it's laid down in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and how it's passed down from person to person to person. But like the game telephone, you know, when you get on, you know, the game telephone, you line up 10 people in this place and I whisper in somebody's ear, you know, God, and he whispers God. And God has all power. God has all power. God, by the time he gets to the end, it's saying, you know, bathe the dog. You know what I mean? It changes. Well, as this program gets passed down through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, quite frankly, is not Well People's Anonymous. Just go to a few meetings. As this program... meetings are not made up of 100 people that have 32 years, okay? They're made up of a whole bunch of people, most of whom are trying to get out as quickly as possible and watching their clock saying, I think this guy's going over, okay? You know, because things aren't that bad with me and you don't understand. And who does he think he is, you know? As this thing gets passed down through the rooms over a period of how many years? 75 years. And some people read this and some people don't read this. And some people, you know, do it one way. And some people, by the time it gets into the year 2013... you start thinking religion is bad. And anybody who talks about religion is bad and the Bible is bad. And you don't realize that in the book it says we begin to see where religion, we lose all prejudice, even against all. Instead of realizing we lose prejudice against organized religion, and that a sober person has no prejudice against organized religion, has an open mind, will read the Bible and all that, we lose all prejudice against open mind. We begin to see where religious people are right. All of a sudden we start thinking what A is about is that we're down on the Catholic Church, we're down on Protestants, we're down on the Bible, we're down on Christians, we're down on this, we're down on that. And you can't tell us what to do. And that's what we start thinking AA is about. And it's completely the opposite. Because we're relying on the wisdom of the rooms. Because we're lazy. And because we're all codependent. So most people who talk from the podium are not going to say anything that are going to make you feel bad or be controversial. Because they want you to love them. You know, they said, please don't reject me. Because they're also, please don't reject me-aholics. But when you start reading the book, when people point out things to you, brightly, you start saying, yeah, you know, you start saying, hey, that stuff is in there. You know, every once in a while, I'll have somebody come up to me and they'll say, you know, you really helped me when you said this. And I'll say, you mean when I read that line out of the big book? He says, yeah, when you read that line, he says, well, it's right in the big book. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. Well, I know it's not the way I read it. I know that they read that line 50 times. They just didn't see it. They just tossed it out. You know what I mean? It's not important because that doesn't apply to me. You know, they wrote, when they start saying things like the great fact, you know, is this and nothing less. When they start talking like that, that stuff is important. I can't tell you why I can't tell you why I got down on my knees and I said that prayer, the third step prayer. I mean, you know, I mean, we could sit around here and we could examine this thing till the cows come home. I think a lot has to do with who I was hanging out. I think the man and woman you'll be in the next 5 years will be determined by who you hang out with and the books you read. And the books you read will be determined by who you hang out with. So I think anybody who's an alcoholic here knows, even though you think you're a leader, you know how much you worry about what other people think about you. You know, listen, you put me in a group of cocaine guys who are doing cocaine, I'm a cocaine addict. You put me in a group of guys who are smoking dope, I'm smoking dope. You smoke me a beer, I'm going to be doing whatever they got. You put me in a group of guys that are talking about God, reading the Bible, doing this stuff, I'm there. Whether I like it or not, over a period of time, you are who you hang out with. Now, here's the crazy thing. I can't tell you why I chose to hang out with those guys instead of the guys that were out in the parking lot. You know this guy's out in the parking lot right now. You know this guy's out in the parking lot right now smoking cigarettes and talking bullshit. You know that, don't you? You know that. They're not in here, okay? You know there are guys that are thinking about what am I going to... You understand that, okay? Why I chose to be one of these guys... I would have stayed here for 4 hours listening to some guy. This was my life. I wanted this more than anything else. I'm saying what people would be talking in the back of the room. He says, aren't they listening to this guy? Don't they? No, they weren't, because they weren't interested. You know, you can't make somebody interested in this thing. You know, you can't force somebody to do this thing. The only thing that happens is that we talk to each other, we share our experiences, and you either want what you see, you either say, I want what that guy has, I want what this guy has, I want this deal going on, or you don't. It's as simple as that. And so I ended up doing it, you know? And, you know, anybody who's done these things, you know, we could say, well, I did the steps and I got a sponsor. But nobody can really tell you why they did that. Why did I do that? You know, I didn't stop going to meetings. Why didn't I stop going to meetings? A lot of people who are smart stop going to meetings. Why did I stay? You know, it's not because of me. It's not because I'm smarter. I'm a good guy. I'm as crazy. I'm as alcoholic as the next. So I'm blaming it on, I'm giving him all the credit, just like Bill Wilson said. What did Bill Wilson say in his story? In Alcoholics Anonymous, the Lord has been so good to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. Somehow, some way, I got hooked onto him. I wanted that deal. I wanted what this guy was talking about. There are people in here that are listening to this. They may not have even heard the whole thing. They may have heard one sentence. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They've decided this is what they want. They get it. You know, they get it. You don't even have to say anymore. They get it. They're just going to travel around and find the people and do the things that they got to do to get this deal. You know, they may not even know what this deal wants, but they know what they don't want. And there are guys in this room that will never get this thing. You know, they'll never, because they're going to walk out of here and say, hey, that was a good meeting. That was great. But, you know, they're just not interested in this deal. And that's the way it works. God bless you. Thank you very much.